Hello, everybody. My name is Graham Elwood. You are watching this on my two YouTube channels, including my new one, Bitcoin Hollywood and Rockfin. And I'm joined by my longtime friend and podcast partner, Chris Mancini. Chris, how you doing?
Doing great. I'll tell you, every time I talk to you, Graham, there's always a new channel. There's a new show. There's a new endeavor for Graham Elwood Inc. Always has something new in the hopper and in the pipeline. So it's very exciting to be part of the new generation of Graham Elwood content.
Well, yes, because America loves freedom of speech so much, I'm literally in Asia doing the show because of, there's a lot happening that we don't need to get into, I guess. I got to keep moving. You know what I mean, Chris?
It's hard to pin down. You got to be a moving target. Yeah.
I'm afraid if I stay in one place too long, they'll get me. But, you know, that's the life of an indie media nut job that's into Bitcoin. You know, it's all right. It's okay. I know who I am. I'm not going to.
I was going to say wandering Bitcoin shaman, but sure. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm a wandering Bitcoin shaman. That's I like that one. It sounds a little less abrasive than the name I gave myself, but sure. But yeah, for people who are like, hey, what is this? So that's in the background, that's our logo from our show, Comedy Film Nerds.
Yes.
Chris and I, we did that for 10 years.
A decade.
It's one of the few podcasts that started as a website and then became a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, we started the business with Graham going, all right, the website's great. It's all set up now. We should add a podcast. And of course, what's a podcast? And then that's how long ago it was.
2009, the end of 2009.
Yep.
And I was like, well, I've been a guest on a couple of these podcast things where basically you just make a radio show in your living room and you put it online. Yeah. And we were like, okay.
Yep.
And we did it in your garage and then the rest is history. But I wanted people to see our logo.
The feed is still up, by the way, too. If you want to hear all 600 episodes of Comedy Film Nerds, for those of you new to the franchise, they're all up on everywhere. They're on Apple, wherever you get podcasts, they're still up.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, we did spoiler episodes where we would talk about the ending of movies. We had a lot of over 600 episodes. We had a lot of amazing guests, filmmakers, big name comedians.
We did.
We've had them all. We had them all on the show.
A lot of them won't talk to us anymore, but yeah, they were on the show.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I was living in Hawaii during the pandemic, and when I moved back to promote my comedy special, which is on Apple TV, it's called Manifest It. Check it out. And I was reaching out to all these people to just like, hey, can I come on your podcast to promote my comedy special? And I was like, wow. You know, when me, you, and Dave Anthony were producing the Los Angeles Podcast Festival, people returned our calls a lot sooner than they...
Yeah. Welcome to Hollywood.
So, yeah, welcome to Hollywood indeed. I was like, wow, all right, I've got nothing to offer you now. So you are not having me on your thing. That's fine. So what have you been up to? In addition to my Bitcoin shamanism, what have you been
You know, the company's actually been growing. I started White Cat Entertainment about 5 years ago to focus on storytelling. And one of the things that I wanted to do was just kind of like explore different types of storytelling through podcasting and graphic novels and different mediums and kind of grow it that way and figure out like just different ways to tell them. And like we did Conversations from the Abyss. I'm working on another season of that, which is short form horror storytelling. And then we did The Quiet Journeys of Professor Atwood, which I think is needed now more than ever, which is a sleep story, adventure, anti-anxiety, insomnia podcast where I kind of took everything I learned from narrative storytelling, comedy, and just put it all together in like a blender. And I got a composer on board. So it's basically me telling about my journeys going all over the world as a scientist. And there's music and sound effects, and there's a certain tone that the music is. So it'll help you kind of relax, tone down anxiety, and help you sleep. And so it's been really rewarding. People have been saying it's been helping them a lot. We're on hiatus now because I almost killed the composer with the workload. So we're going to come back next year. That's The Quiet Journeys of Professor Atwood. And then the graphic novels and comics have been going really well for Long Gone Far Away and Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master. I just 5 years later, I just got a publishing deal. So now they will be in comic book stores in the fall. So I've partnered with another company. So very excited about that. So now the only thing left for the company to do is like make money. Other than that, you know, everything's, you know,
just that little step.
Going really well, you know, things go in development, they come back out, and you know, it's an option year later, it disappears. So it's, you know, still, I got to tell you, it's one of the things that we discovered is that, you know, you could chase pitches and, you know, hope somebody hires you until the cows come home and the day never ends. But doing things on our own, making our own books, making our own content, even like scripted interview, it doesn't matter. It's still super rewarding because then you're more in a position to kind of like talk to people as coming on board as partners or sponsors. Then, you know, I've even talked to other showrunners that, like, you know, writing a spec script and trying to submit it to get a writing job, it's, you have a better chance of winning the lottery because of the way, you know, Hollywood has been kind of collapsing lately. And so I've always been a proponent, as you have, of like, go do your own thing, blaze your own trail, and do things on your own. You'll probably make less, but you will be happier because you'll be able to control everything that you're doing.
Yeah, you do have creative control. That's great. And I just want to, KD in the chat's like, oh, maybe you're on the wrong channel. No, you're not. You're at Bitcoin Hollywood, but it's okay. It's okay.
Might have been talking to me. So,
I just wanted some of the people, so that my new channel, Bitcoin Hollywood, is going to talk about things Bitcoin, but it's a Bitcoin entertainment channel. So I really wanted to put this on there because, while I don't think Chris and I are going to talk much about Bitcoin, we're going to talk about one of the greatest actors and filmmakers out there. And that's one of the focuses that I'm working on having. You know, it's funny, Chris, you and I have always just sort of kind of, we've done traditional Hollywood and we've had to sort of bang our heads against the wall, which is frustrating. And when you do your own thing, there's other challenges to deal with. But like you say, you're making your own, you know. We had a successful podcast for 10 years and it was,
and company, you know, production company. And a company. I mean, we literally published a book, made a film, a podcast, and had an entire store to support other comedians. It was really a whole, on a smaller level, it was like a little media company, really.
It really was, you know, and the industry changed and stuff, and the festival was another cool thing that we were a part of, and the industry changed and stuff, but I look back on all the stuff we did and I think it's so cool. And you know, one of the things I'm doing with Bitcoin, I've been a lot in the Bitcoin space, and the Bitcoin space, it's mostly tech and finance people, and there's not a lot of creatives, and I see an opportunity for scripted content and really cool stuff that has maybe little Bitcoin themes in it, or it's funded through Bitcoin. Or I personally think that the way, you know, Bitcoin and blockchain technology, since it's so transparent, I think this is a thing that could transform Hollywood because we could all be getting paid.
No, I lost you.
Oh, are you there?
Yeah, I lost you for a second.
Sorry.
It fell out right at getting paid, which is interesting. So,
well, that's a big media company was like, nope. because I want to see, and you and I have had to deal with this ourselves. We have a movie we made together that we're told, oh, it's not, there's no residuals, and we don't know. Yeah. And I feel like the open source
decentralized nature of Bitcoin, we could get to a place where, you know, you as a filmmaker, somebody downloads your movie and you get a favorable split, and then you have your writer and your lead actors, you know, Bitcoin wallets all attached to it, and everyone's getting paid in real time. Everyone can just look in their phone and go, yep, that'll work. I just got paid, and there's no middleman taking a big piece of the pie and then cooking the books and saying, now your movie's not doing well.
Every time we ask the distributor for a sales report, we end up owing more. So
yeah, it's just like,
I thought we made no, it's the expenses went up. How
for a movie that's just sitting on a hard drive space? Yeah, like yeah. How? Like we probably should have just gotten a loan from the mob and just done it that way. But you know, the thing, especially as the world is getting kind of crazy, America's going in a really bizarre space. I do miss just talking movies because there's a simplicity to it. And when Robert Redford passed away, it meant a lot. It was like, oh wow, he's had so many movies that meant a lot to me. And that's why I texted you. And it's also just like once a year we talk about something, the Robert Pattinson Batman movie or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Cause people ask, like, you know, I get a tweet on X or in Facebook, hey, you and Graham ever going to do another episode? Or I'm like, yeah, we do them every once in a while. Like, I think sometimes people forget to check the feed because we do them every once in a while. But so there is still a demand, Graham, for Comedy Film Nerds.
You know, Chris, I'm you know, you're in LA and I'm in Asia and we figured out how to make this work. So, I mean, I think we can, I'm down with doing more of these. So let's, you know, let's get into it. We really wanted to remember Robert Redford, who usually when a celebrity passes, I go, oh wow. You know, I'm always like, well, they had a full life. They did a lot of cool stuff. And I obviously feel that way with Robert Redford, but it had his movies, man, like, where do you want to start? What do you want to start with?
There's a lot. You know, I was looking at the list too, and I doubt either you and I together have seen everything that he's done. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that it's so much. But I think I want to start a little bit more before we get into specific movies about his life, how he wasn't really satisfied with being just an actor, where he became a producer. But also he was a staunch activist for environmentalism, and he created the Sundance Film Festival and the Sundance Institute. So he wanted to support filmmaking. So he was an artist that did very, very well, but also gave back to a tremendous amount. Some of them not even film or entertainment related. And it's just a good example of somebody who was very successful and stunningly handsome, but also he did a lot of good with his life, which was really, really great. So I think, like, not only was he an amazing actor and a great producer, and but his philanthropy and his contribution to film and filmmaking is just as important, I think.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point, and I think it speaks to who he was, because, look, he came up in Hollywood in the early 60s where being blonde, blue-eyed, good-looking guy, you're set. I mean, he just was like, he could have just had this career making these big studio pictures and been fine and just lived in his house in Malibu and been fine and just collected paychecks. But he wanted more, and he didn't want to just be the pretty boy leading man. He wanted to do more stuff. And he was a very skilled actor. I mean, I'll go back to an episode of The Twilight Zone before he was famous. A great episode where he plays death, basically. And there's he charms his way into this old woman's house. He acts like he's injured or sick or whatever. And then he's like, you know, it's your time. And it was really, and it wasn't, it starts out, she's scared of him and all this stuff, but then it's really born. And it's again, more of Rod Serling's brilliance of saying, you know, death is going to come for all of us. It's nothing to be afraid of.
Right.
Just don't fight it. You know what I mean? It's okay. And death is going to show up as a good-looking young guy that's sick or whatever. But if you watch that episode, you see how skilled of an actor he was back then.
Now, let me ask you this. When you saw that Twilight Zone episode, like I went back and watched them because I didn't really remember a lot of them. Did you know he was in it, or like me, did you watch the episode and go, is that Robert Redford?
Yeah, I definitely was. It was like, oh, wow. That's the thing I loved about that show was I go, wait, that's a young, you know, fill in the blank. I mean, that's, yeah. That's all of these young. Dean Stockwell was in it as a young actor. You know, obviously there's the very famous Terror at 3000 Feet with William Shatner, where he's just all Shatner going, there's a bird on the plane, being all crazy Shatnery, you know.
And that wasn't even his only episode. He did multiple episodes.
Yeah, Burgess Meredith. I mean, that's one of the beautiful things of Twilight Zone is all of these people early on in many of their careers. But for me too, I think not only was Robert Redford an activist in his personal life, he really wanted to do movies. Not every movie had some big social commentary, but you know, The Sting is just a great fun. It is a fun movie. It's like old school Hollywood at its best. You know, it's got great twists and turns. Robert Shaw's great as the bad guy. I mean, it's Newman and Redford just at their peak. I mean, they're doing great stuff. But then, you know, you look at All the President's Men. I mean, that movie for me, I mean, my first known recollection of American politics is being a really small child going, Daddy, why is the President Nixon resigning? and him going, he lied. And so when you lie, you can't be president anymore. That's not true anymore. That rule doesn't apply anymore. Obviously, you can do whatever you want now. But
back then, during simpler times, there was
a thing called right and wrong, and you don't lie, and it's integrity. And but like I remember then as I when All the President's Men came out. I mean, it's one of the things that the invention of the VHS tape in the 80s is one of the things that really opened my world to all of these great movies that were made in the 70s. Some of them I was too young to watch or whatever, but this video place, Video Sonic, I talked about this on Film Nerds years ago, opened up near me in Chicago. And I would go and I rented all these movies, like All the President's Men.
Me too.
And I was like, oh. And like, what was it like? I mean,
the old war the first movies, time you all saw of them. All the
President's Men. Like,
it was really, it was great because it was also one of those movies that even as a kid, you realize, well, this happened. This is based on true events. And it was so compelling. Yeah. And they're real people. So it was super compelling. Even at a younger age, I was really, really engaged by it. And, you know, you look at a movie like that, and then, you know, you look at a movie like, you know, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, you know, technically also based on, real people. but you saw kind of like Robert Redford's range. And, you know, you've got, this kind of like buddy, almost a comedy with Paul Newman. And I mean, they're amazing together. And obviously that wasn't their, only collaboration. And it goes through all of these different like times in their lives when they're like on the top of their game and they're robbing banks. Then all of a sudden, they got a little too good and too big for their britches. And, the expert lawmen started coming after them. And they're like, well, now we got to kind of run. And, leave the country. And then I love the fact that like, okay, you guys, you might be safe now. I'm like, nope, we're going to keep robbing banks in the new country. So I'm like, all right, if that's what you guys are going to do. And then they got again, infamous in, another country. And then sure enough, of course, spoiler alert, it was a big shootout at the end that they did not do well at, but what I wanted to, say though, it's interesting, like all the different roles that Robert Redford has, he always seemed to be the most comfortable in like a gentleman thief or a gentleman bad guy, where he was always just kind of like super likable, but also kind of a criminal. I mean, when you look at like The Sting, super charming, you know, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. But then also later on, I don't know if you saw this one, The Old Man and the Gun, where he's like, he escapes from prison. He's in his 70s and he's, I think he's like a cat burglar or something. So he's basically playing kind of like almost like homage to his older characters that were kind of like that. It's a really fun like movie that he made later in life that kind of like touches on those, that charm that he had as these other criminals. So it was a really fun movie, especially if you're like a fan of Robert Redford. Was it his best movie? No, but it had that cool nostalgia to it.
Oh, I didn't see that. That's, that's cool too. I mean, like those movies he did in the 70s, all the President's Men, like you say, I was like, wow, this really happened. And this, how it went down. Yeah. And this is like, who's Deep Throat and all these other great actors in it. But then I remember too, one of the movies that had a huge impact on me was 3 Days of the Condor.
Yes.
Because it exposed, and I don't think, you know, again, this isn't, I think the 70s was a golden era of filmmaking because it's before the big corporations came in and had to make the blockbusters. I don't think you could make a movie critical of the CIA today. I don't think they would let you do it. I mean, I think and that movie was like, was
Grammy really just went out again. That's it. No,
of course. Freeze. As soon as I say that,
but it was really good. It was a great thriller too. Like it was 3 Days of the Condor. I mean, it was Max von Sydow was on it. He was super chilling. Oh. And the one thing, if you watch it now, you are going to laugh. You're like, you know, cause all the data analysts, they're like grabbing stacks of paper now, you know, because there was no hard drives or laptops back then. So they're all like, you know, we have to carry out these large boxes of paper to protect them.
I mean, Max von Sydow is such a great villain in that. But then he's called off and then they sort of like Max von Sydow at the end when he's like, there's no longer a hit on you. And they're talking and he's like, that day in the park, how did you, you know, and Max is just like talking as a professional hitman to another guy. And he's so good at that. Mm-hmm. And Robert Redford just, you know, the fact that he was sort of, you know, just living on his wits and it was great. And also Faye Dunaway is great in it and their relationship is great. That movie was really, I still look back on that movie. I watched it again a couple years ago and I was like, wow, this is really, and they're showing the cover up, they're showing geopolitical stuff and how they've got to, you know, deal with oil. I mean, it's the 70s and the Middle East politics. And I was like, wow, some of this stuff is still very, very relevant.
Yes.
And
in a sad way, some stuff is still very relevant.
Yeah.
It was great. Love that movie.
And the movie that really, it's probably my favorite movie of his because I saw it in the theaters when it came out, was The Natural. I love sports movies.
Yeah.
And that movie, I was, you know, a teen, I was like 14 or 15 when that movie came out, and the whole, everything didn't, you know, he was on track to just be the best, the new star, and it didn't go his way. And then he's got to kind of come back as this, you know, middle-aged guy with one last shot. It was just so, oh man, it was like, there's a sadness to that film, but then a beauty to it. And I know some people didn't like the movie because in the book, it's based on a book. There's a different ending in the book than there is in the movie, but I don't know. I just was like, I loved the big Hollywood ending. I still watch that movie every once in a while, and I get chills, and I know the lines from it. And
there's a reason they do it, the big Hollywood endings.
It's effective. It works.
Yeah.
And I think it's too, just like I love baseball. The Cubs clinched a playoff spot yesterday, and I was like, I was so excited about it. And I was like, why are we so emotional and excited about this? I was just like, cause baseball is, I don't know. I like all these other sports, but there's just something about baseball as a kid. It's the summer, you know, you just go to the ball. I don't know. There's something about it. And that's, I think, why the natural baseball movies are always, always, there's something special about a baseball movie.
For sure.
And
for
that,
sure,
to me, is one of the best ones.
So are you, what was the, there was a couple comedy ones too. Major League was another big comedy baseball movie. And of course, The League of Their Own was the
League of Their Own, the big, ones. Those are the comedy ones, which were decent. But I mean, like, all, you know, I put The Natural up there with Field of Dreams. You know, I'm trying to think of, because both The Natural and Field of Dreams, I mean, the Field of Dreams is definitely like, has a supernatural, you know, spiritual afterworld component to it. And The Natural has a little bit of that.
A little taste.
Taste, because he
there's a word for like, it now. They actually call it something now. It's called magical realism, where it's kind of magical, but it actually is kind of grounded in the real world. They came up with a term for it a couple of years ago.
Oh, that's cool. And I think the reason The Natural did it was they were sort of playing on, since he was playing a fictional character, but he was they were playing on the sort of mythical stories that are told about like Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and these guys that were like, you know, Babe Ruth called the shot. And so, you know, in The Natural, he hits the cover off the ball and the, you know, lightning hits it. And this is like, there's all this sort of mystical stuff around it, which is just so, it's so great. And then, you know, that's the other, God, there's another great movie he did in the 80s. He had this,
he had a run,
you know, in the 80s. He had a run in the 80s after the 70s block. And then the 80s when he did, what was it? Electric Cowboy? No. Electric Horseman. No, no. The one with Jane Fonda where he's the.
I think the Electric is in there. I think. Yeah, I'm trying to remember now. Electric Horseman. No, that's right.
Yeah, Electric Horseman. And again,
that one I don't remember as much.
That movie, I loved it because it was, and again, it has a little social commentary in it. He's this kind of older, and it, you know, it's funny, when he was in his 40s in the 80s, he was viewed as this like old time guy. And it's like, he still looked amazing. I mean, like, yes, well, I know. So Electric Horseman, he plays a retired, he was a big time bull rider, and he was big famous bull rider, and now he's a pitch man, and he's, you know, he's kind of addicted to pills because he's got pain problems, and the, and he just ends up, it starts out, he's riding this horse, which is this like amazing horse that a big corporation bought it. And it talks about all that corporate America stuff that they, in the 70s, where they first really started addressing that with movies like Network, Rollerball, and then Electric Horseman.
Oh my God. I can't believe that movie got made. I mean, that was a brilliant, brilliant film. And it was now, maybe 20 years ahead of its time. I mean, something crazy where I'm like, oh no, this is exactly what's going to happen.
Well, now you look back on it, and you're like, oh, Network was a documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah. The outlandish crap that happens in Network.
Yeah. I'm like,
is not outlandish today.
No, no. The one character that they propped up to be like this, you know, the crazy guy, an influencer now. He was basically an influencer. You know, it's there's parallels to literally everything in that movie now. The corporations and the just the way the newsrooms were just, I know we're getting off on a tangent a little bit, but it's an important one. The way the newsrooms were run, where, you know, there were times where the sponsors weren't even allowed to talk to the journalists, and everything was definitely, it was segmented purposefully, where I remember, like, even when I was in college, we had an executive of CBS came and spoke to the class, and he was saying, that's like, you know, this is where we make our money. It's, you know, it's entertainment and shows, but news is our responsibility, where he was making the point that it doesn't matter if it makes money or not. It doesn't matter if we have sponsors or not. This, as a network, our responsibility to the American people is to keep them informed. And all of that has changed now, but that was the philosophy before, you know, pre all these things that happened at network. It was that news was considered every network's responsibility to keep everyone informed.
And in the late 80s and the 90s, the news had to start being profitable. And that's when all the sensationalist stuff started happening. And that's when they had to have good ratings like a regular sitcom would. And, you know, getting back to Electric Horseman, it deals with, so the movie starts out, he's doing some big corporate event. He's on this big racehorse that's this big famous sort of man of war, Seabiscuit type horse, you know, mm-hmm. that's won all these races. That's now
right. He's
riding it around, and they put all these lights on it. He's at some big corporate event, and there's all these great character actors from the 70s who are the corporate guys. And he just says, Robert Redford just decides, he just splits, takes the horse and goes off into he's in Vegas. I think he's in Vegas at some big event, you know, in Vegas. And it's like, hey, the horseman. And Robert Redford just takes the horse and splits and goes out into the wild. And Jane Fonda, the reporter, starts tracking him.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Redford's talking about how they're pumping this horse full of all these things. And
right.
And it's an amazing movie that I don't think could get made today. And it's one of those things, like, it's not the big, but Willie Nelson's in it.
Right.
And Wilford Brimley, who is in so many Robert Redford movies, because Robert Redford loves him, who's great in The Natural, you know.
By the way, Wilford Brimley looked 70 for 40 years.
I know. Robert Redford looked 25 for 30 years, and Wilford Brimley looked 70 for 40 years. Yeah. He's great. I mean, Wilford Brimley, you know, it's just watch The Electric Horseman if you haven't. It's one of those go back. It's not as known as The Sting or The Natural or All the President's Men, but go back and watch that movie. It's an amazing. I haven't seen it in years. I'm gonna go back and watch it.
I'll definitely check it out. One of the movies too I wanted to mention too with Robert Redford, like the thing that I also loved about him is he was just as comfortable being a leading man as he was being in an ensemble cast. There was never that I'm the star, I need to overshadow everyone. Like, no, he never came across that way. I don't think he ever felt that way. And in his presence on screen means he was just there to act. He was just show up to act, whether he's the lead or where he's supporting, because I was thinking of A Bridge Too Far, which is studded with stars, and British stars, American stars, and Gene Hackman. I mean, Michael Caine. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And Robert Redford is in it. He's one of the leaders of the American forces that are, of course, trying to take the bridges. But he fits so seamlessly into an ensemble cast that you never go like, well, when's Robert Redford coming back? And because he fits so well, like he doesn't overshadow the other performers. He doesn't lag behind. He just knows how to give the exact right amount to become like a part of an ensemble. So that's the other thing about Robert Redford. There was no ego there. I mean, he showed up, he worked, he did his job. He wanted to do certain things. There are certain things he didn't want to do. But, you know, there's never any like stories of like, oh, Robert Redford was such an asshole on set. Like, you know, you don't hear like any of those, you know.
Well,
like, so it's, you know, it just kind of speaks to the man as a whole, too.
I think to that point, Wendy Grafton in the chat said, I loved him in Spy Game with Brad Pitt. And I think that movie is a great example. It's sort of a young Brad Pitt. Robert Redford is like, this is the, I think, late 90s. Early 2000s. So Brad Pitt has already sort of become Brad Pitt, and Robert Redford is his mentor in the CIA, and he's covering, and it's a great example of of Robert Redford being just how good he is, but also he has no problem with, okay, this is the new young, this is who I was, you know, 30 years ago. So
yes.
So great. Let Brad Pitt be Brad Pitt and I'll be Robert Redford in his 60s or 70s or whatever he was at the time of that movie. And it's a great, just good spy cat and mouse, you know, navigating the politics within the halls of the CIA, you know, right. and he's this old cagey veteran guy who's looking out for his young. It's a great, I'm glad Wendy brought that up. Anybody else in the chat has any other Robert Redford movies, please list them.
Well, one of the things I also wanted to mention too, is when you've got such a long history and career like Robert Redford, you wonder like how many generations have actually enjoyed watching him on the screen that, you know, may not even be aware of his other work. Like if you look at the recent work, I mean, he was in a Marvel movie. He was in Winter Soldier. He's fantastic. And it goes also speaks to the point where like you go, oh, Robert Redford is going to be so far above, you know, every other actor in the movie. And he kind of is, but you know, the way he performs the role, the way he interacts with all the other characters, he just falls right into it. Like he's been doing Marvel movies for the last 20 years. I mean, it was so good. Now I want to ask you this though. I was looking at his IMDb. It says that he was in Avengers Endgame, like his character, but I don't remember seeing him. Was it in a flashback or something, or did it get cut out? Do you remember that?
Wow, that's a great question. I vaguely remember all those Marvel movies are starting to blend into each other in my head, but I think there was just a quick sort of, because
he was the Hydra
big executive
guy.
It was a Hydra guy. That was a secret Hydra guy. So I think there was just some. Yeah, it might have been a flashback. Boy, that's a great question. I don't remember.
But yeah, because I was I don't remember him in this in Endgame fighting.
But
Thanos.
I think though Endgame didn't Endgame they put anyone that's ever been in any Marvel movie? They just threw a quick 5 seconds of them up on screen, basically. Like
pretty much. I mean, that was like literally everyone who's ever been in a Marvel movie was there. So I was trying to remember like what scene, where was he? Because but yeah, I mean, and when I was reading an interview that he said he just, you know, he understood that new filmmaking was a lot of special effects and fantasy and all of these things that, you know, you're working on a blue or a green screen now that, you know, he never did, you know, years ago that it didn't exist, all this visual effects. So he also, not only did he want to do it, he had a curiosity of what like modern high tech, you know, VFX filmmaking was like. So that was another reason why he wanted to do it. Instead of being the old guy, like, I don't care, that's not how you make movies anymore. He was actually curious. He wanted to say, let me see this new technology, and I want to see it.
Yeah, I mean, he'd been in the business 6 decades. I mean, like, another great example of what you're talking about is The Last Castle, which is a great movie that came out maybe 10 years ago.
Is that the one with James Gandolfini?
Yes. It's okay, so, I and they're so that good. Mm-hmm. Like he's this highly decorated.
What kind of man are you? Yeah. Like they just went at each other. It was so good.
Yes. And there's a great scene. So he's in prison. Robert Redford's in a military prison because he's a general that defied orders. And it's this controversial thing, but some people think, you know, he did the right thing or whatever. So he's this high integrity general, you know, and he's in this prison and James Gandolfini's kind of like, wow, I want to meet this guy because he wrote these books. And James Gandolfini has, you know, little toy soldiers, you know, and he's like, Gandolfini's in awe of Robert Redford. Oh, he's this, this big general, which would fit in terms of like, Gandolfini's just a TV star and this is Robert Redford. So it matched. And then Robert Redford says, somebody asks him and, oh, what do you think of all these these miniature soldiers? And Robert Redford's character doesn't know that Gandolfini is in the next room and can hear him. And he goes, anybody that plays war like this, it's because they've never been in a real one. And Gandolfini, they do a close up of Gandolfini. He hears this and he's like, oh, my hero thinks I'm a loser. And then you can see Gandolfini's character does this petty little ego thing where I'm going to go after, you know, and it was like, oh, wow, it was two really good actors. Mm-hmm. And there's a, you know, there's a good ensemble cast and Delroy Lindo's in it. And it's, you know, it's just classic Redford, man. It's, he's being Robert, and it's perfectly cast because to play Robert Redford's a perfect guy to play some like larger than life type general that's mm-hmm. wrongfully imprisoned, you know?
And that scene, you know, to the director's credit as well, was set up that it was the whole movie was going to be basically a chess game between those two characters.
Yeah. 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 It was really cool.
So I also saw, I think, because one of my kids was at the right age, he was in a Disney remake called Pete's Dragon. It was a live action one. And again, like, you know, like, oh, that's Robert Redford. He does not walk through one role, even a remake of a Disney animated movie. He brings his A game. not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
But again, it's, you can never fault Robert Redford for, you know, just coming in and giving it his all, no matter what it is.
Yeah. Even in, there was a movie I saw with him and Morgan Freeman and J-Lo, and they're like in the mountains and Morgan Freeman was attacked by a bear or something. And I got through half of it. And I was like,
wait, I want to see this movie now. I've never heard of this movie. J-Lo, Robert Redford and a bear. Wait, you're actually selling it.
If that was the movie poster, it would have done so much better.
Yeah. I would have at least remembered it.
She does a dance number. He fights the bear. It's great. Yeah. It's good stuff. Yeah, even that, one. I can't remember the name of that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bobby and the Bear. I don't know. I forget what it's called.
You know, Bob, the dancer and the bear, something.
The bear from around the block. Yeah, I don't know. I forget what it's called.
See if someone in the chat knows.
Someone in the chat might know, but to your point, the movie wasn't that great. I couldn't, but still, he was still being very good in it, and that's why I was like, even, you know, 15, 20 minutes in, you're like, this movie's not that great, but I stayed probably another 15 minutes just because of him.
Right. You Yeah. Absolutely. Because he had that presence in every movie he's ever done.
Yeah, it's like we talked about guys like, I mean, in for different reasons, but also like Gene Hackman. I'll see Gene Hackman in any movie just because he's gonna bring Gene Hackman hard no matter what the film is, even if it's
right.
The script is okay. I saw an interview with years, maybe 10, 15 years ago with Glenn Close about working with him on The Natural. Mm-hmm. And she said she learned so much from him when they were shooting their scenes together, in particular the scene, I think that's in, well, they shot, I have a bunch of scenes together, but in the apartment in Chicago after they reconnect. And she said, you know, they were doing the wide shots first and then her coverage. And then when they went into his coverage, she said he got better and better as they went in on the close-ups. Like he knew, Robert Redford knows the business of acting. And it's like, when I'm in a tight close-up, that's when I really got to bring it. And she goes, she saw him like get better and better and more depth emotionally as the shot got closer.
So he would emote more depending on where the camera was. He was that savvy that he would know where it was at all times. Wow.
Yes. Yes.
Had like a sixth sense.
So he's just like, all right, so this is my close up. Okay. So this is, then I need to really get these lines in. And the wide mm-hmm. shot, we're probably not going to use a lot of the wide, you know, he just knew like how movies are cut and why close ups, you know, that's show, that's movies. That's putting your face on a 40-foot screen, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
I think.
Did you see any of your, like, well, I was going to say, did you see any of his like super recent ones? Like the, probably the oldest or the most recent one I probably saw him was Old Man and the Gun. But there was like a lot of other ones, like, you know, Walk in the Woods and All Is Lost when he was on the boat. I never saw that one either. But there's all these movies that he never stopped working. So no. I didn't see some of these. I didn't see a lot of these.
I think it's probably a testament to who he was as a person and his work. He just, like you said earlier, he just liked acting. He loved being an actor, and he probably just loved being on the set and was just like, I doubt he needed the money, you know? And right. So he's probably just like, I just want to work. And yeah, old man in the sea where he's stuck on that boat. I saw that trailer for that. It looked intriguing. I think, wasn't there another movie where he did where him and this other actress were both like older and both of their spouses had passed away and they start kind of a relationship?
A River Runs Through It? No.
No, that's what that was from the 90s.
But I'm sure there is one if you that happens. But yeah, it could be any of these. Wow, he was in the Virginian too. Like all these like old Western shows he was in too.
Oh, dude, that's when you were a young actor in Hollywood in the 50s and 60s. You came up in Western. I mean, especially he was in a lot of you came up in TV, man. He was a guest star in the Virginian. I think he was even in a episode of Gunsmoke, maybe.
Maverick, the deputy, like all I'm looking at the list now. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't realize how much of this older stuff he was in. Yeah, it's remarkable. The Virginian. Yeah, there it is. I see it now. But
yeah, Twilight Zone. I mean, he did.
So yeah, you were saying like, what are your favorites of his?
Yeah.
I gotta say, I think it's, for different reasons, like A Bridge Too Far, because it just showed how great he fit in with an ensemble. And then Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid to show just like how charming he can be, even if he's playing a criminal or an outlaw. And I think 3 Days of the Condor. But then I would probably top it all off again with Old Man and the Gun, to kind of, because it really felt like a celebration of his career, that movie, like with the nostalgia.
There's what's the other one? Jeremiah, or what? He's that trapper living in the woods.
Wow. So yeah, you're pulling all these out. Are you sure that wasn't the bear movie?
No. No, it was in the 70s, and he has a beard and long hair, and he's wearing like fur pelts most of the movie.
I can honestly say I have no idea which one that one is.
Yeah, I think for me, first of all, The Natural is that's my favorite of his of all time.
Baseball.
But then I would have to put The Sting, obviously, but I got to put Electric Horseman in there because it's lesser known, but it's really good and it should have gotten more hype and awards, or I don't know what where it was at in the Oscar, you know, politics at that time. But, and then I don't, you know, I think I would put, if I'm going to do a top five, probably I'd put Spy Game up there because he was really, it's really, it's solid work that he's doing with Brad Pitt. And yeah.
Okay. All good choices. Oh, somebody put in the chat, McCabe and Mrs. Miller. That was the bear movie.
That was
maybe it's the bear movie. I don't know.
That's not the bear movie. McCabe and Mrs. Miller. That's not the bear movie. We'll just call it Bobby and the Bear. We'll just call it that. What movie are you going to go back and watch that you haven't watched in a while, or which one of his movies you have never seen that you really want to go watch?
I think there's two. One of them is The Natural, because it's been so long, I barely kind of remember that one. And the other one is, I think I'm going to go rewatch Bridge Too Far.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that for. I just remember his line going, "You British, you're always by the book."
Yeah.
I just remember that line.
Yeah. He's not wrong. So
he's not wrong. He's not wrong. Wow, now that you say that, I'm going to go back and watch A Bridge Too Far. And I never saw the Old Man and the Gun movie, so I want to watch that.
Yeah, it's really fun.
I think I'm going to go back and watch all these movies we've discussed. I'm going to go back and watch. I want to watch. I want to watch Electric Horseman for sure, because I haven't seen that in forever. And I probably couldn't hurt to get a Sting in there. And then All the President's Men, and
one of the greatest movie themes of all time, The Sting, The Entertainer.
Oh, it's and it takes place in Chicago, and and there's just great stuff in it. Cool.
Yep.
Anything else, well, my friend?
That's our. I think that's my weekend now. I think I'm gonna.
you got stuff to do.
But that was, it's just a life well lived and a life that deserved to be celebrated on and off the screen for sure, because he did a lot of good and he didn't care if it was for likes or because, you know, there was no videoing for verticals there anyway. You know, he was doing things because they were the right thing to do. And he was passionate about protecting the environment and supporting young filmmakers and supporting causes and all good things. And he's leaving quite a legacy behind, both on and off the screen. So rest in peace and God bless.
Yeah. And I'll just add this, Santara, and I'm sure this was significant. The first time I went up to Sundance was with the Hello Junkie short film. And I was in one of the smaller. Yeah, we were there together. We were up there and just being up there was like, wow, this was really cool. And look what this guy created, and the reverence for filmmakers. And big companies have come in and doing what big media companies do, but still there's still a reverence for filmmakers. There's still reverence for artists and actors. And
it's a scene I was at Slam Dance. You were at like another festival. Was it a Slam Dunk?
No Dance. I can't
remember. No Dance. Yeah.
It's called No Dance.
Yeah. No, but that's kind of the thing. It's like, do you think Robert Redford cared that there were other competing festivals at the same time? He would encouraged it. It's like the whole point is to, celebrate filmmaking and young filmmakers. And I remember Roger Ebert saying, somebody asked him, why don't you ever cover the Slam Dance movies? He's like, because they're at the same time as Sundance. That was the only reason. Like, he wouldn't, he couldn't cover them. So it's all a good thing. I mean, and it just also goes to show, if he hadn't created Sundance, none of these other satellite festivals would have happened, and they've launched careers as well. I mean, we were at the year where Christopher Nolan had his breakout movie at Slam Dance that one year. It was Memento. And his career, skyrocketed right for that. But he was playing it. He wasn't in Sundance. He was playing at Slam Dance. So it's all good. And it's, it's thanks to Robert Redford for, getting all that started.
Yeah. And that's what you should do when you get to be that famous. I think you have an obligation. Yeah. Yeah. You got to help people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, I think you have a moral obligation to give back, not just buy mansions and drive around in yachts or whatever. Like, I think you have a moral obligation when you're that famous and have that much money and access to people with power and money to do good things. I mean, he was a businessman. He made obviously business decisions, but like,
you could do both. You can protect the environment and drive around in a yacht. You could
really do both. Exactly. You can give back. You can support artists and have a nice house. I mean, you can do those things.
Yeah.
So it was really cool, man. I was a little sad, but 89. Hey, that's a pretty good life. And look at this list of movies. I mean, I would kill to have 10% of these films on my resume,
So it's a really life awesome to celebrate for sure. And I'm glad you texted me. I'm like, yeah, this is the big, great idea to do this. Now, we shouldn't wait till another celebrity dies to do another.
No.
I know there's going to be a new Batman movie coming out, and we'll talk about some superhero stuff, but for sure.
It's September, and
in a usually month do or one two, in the fall. Yeah.
Yeah. We should do one in the next couple months when all the Oscar movies start rolling out.
Yeah, for sure.
And do that. So, well, guys, thanks. Chris, give a plug for all your stuff.
Absolutely. You can reach me at White Cat Entertainment and subscribe to a Substack there and get signed graphic novels. You can also get them on Amazon. Check out Long Gone Far Away and Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master, as well as the podcasts Quiet Journeys of Professor Atwood, as well as Conversations from the Abyss. One is horror, one is a sleep story. So basically it's stories to help you sleep and stories to keep you awake, depending on which mood you're in. So... But you can find me and everything at whitecatentertainment.com.
Right on. Somebody just in the chat said, did we mention All Is Lost? I don't think we did mention that movie.
That was the one he was alone on the boat. But yeah, I'm trying to remember if I saw it. If I did see it, I don't think I did see it because I'm trying to remember it. I can't quite remember it. But yeah, he got a lot of accolades for his performance in that. But I don't think I either didn't see it or I don't remember it.
Well, in the chat, Jenning 1105 said he is phenomenal in it. Spellbinding, All Alone. Wow, that's cool. Yes. That's great. Mm-hmm. Well, that's added to the list of movies I'm going to go watch.
Yes.
Of his. So guys, you can go to grahamelwood.com. I'll be announcing new tour dates. I also have a new YouTube channel, Bitcoin Hollywood, and a website, bitcoin-hollywood.com. So check those out. I'm going to be releasing more scripted content. And one of the reasons I'm in Asia is I'm putting some stuff together here that will be bringing more cool scripted content, episodic features, all kinds of stuff. So go check that out and like, share, and subscribe and do all that. And to all the Comedy Film Nerd fans out there, if you're listening on the Comedy Film Nerd feed, you know, we love you. We miss you. We'll do more of these.
Kitten hands forever.
My name's Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first.
Nice. All right, guys. We'll see you later. Thank you so much.